Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And I don't really know what we're going to talk about, but I guess we'll see. I've watched a lot of TV, but nothing that I don't think anything that we haven't already talked about. I don't think I've watched anything new, really. Actually, I did want to ask you about something that I know you saw that was not television or film.
Okay.
So you went to the theater.
Yes, I did. literally right after we recorded, I started getting ready to to go see Hamilton for actually the second time. We had seen it pre-pandemic, and then we were supposed to see it around the like after everything started opening up again, and we ended up not being able to because the show ended up closing because of COVID restrictions. And then they reopened again. And that's kind of like a weird thing. We're undercover. Like I'm more undercover than my wife is. My wife was she was a theater kid when she grew up, when she was in high school and stuff, singing and everything. I'm an undercover theater kid.
I feel like we have that in common where it's like, I love the theater, but I don't talk about loving the theater that much.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just one of those things where it's like, they don't know why. It's just, it's something I do on my own or with people that I'm around. And I mean, it's something that I've done for a very long time. I mean, there was a point where I was working for a certain particular bank that will remain nameless just because I think I disparaged them a lot on the podcast because they were a previous job. But I was a corporate trainer, and I spent a total of about 6 months in New York, 3 months the first stretch, and then another 3 to 4 months the next stretch. And it was New York, New York. Like literally I was in Midtown Manhattan. Like they put me up there because I was a corporate trainer. I was very young, very stupid. Threw that job away, which my life would probably be very different now if I'd stayed that corporate stooge that I was. But the benefit of it was that I was a theater kid all my life, and then all of a sudden I got to see actual Broadway theater productions, and I kind of fell in love, and in a big way. New York is a city where you fall in love with certain things of it, and my 6 months, my half a year spent there, living in hotels and stuff, theater was a huge, huge, huge thing. My wife hates me for this, and most women will probably hate me that love theater arts, but I got to see Wicked 3 times in its original run with Idina Menzel and, what's her name? Kristen Chenoweth, 3 times.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah, the first time I actually saw it, I actually paid for the tickets. The second time, after I learned about it, is I did a standby, 2 times as standby. And because I'd already seen the play, if you guys don't know what standby is, it's literally you just wait. And,
look, the New York theater, I don't want to call it a scene because that implies something else, but I don't know how to put it. But I went to New York for a couple of days, but I had a guy, we had a tour guide, break all of it down for us.
Yes.
And there's no way to describe it because part of it feels like a total scam, but it also is kind of exciting. It's like a lottery. It's a theater lottery. And it's just because they also have you're talking about the standby, but then they all I want to say it's by the Red Stairs, right? Or something where you go wait in line. And then, like, you get, and it's basically you get up there, you don't know what shows they have. And mm-hmm. they're just like, we got tickets for this. Do you want that? And yeah. it's like so bizarre, man.
And the price is like wild because it's like super discounted. Like yeah. the first time I saw Wicked. And
that's why people do it, because you could wind up seeing some amazing cast like thing for like $35 or something. Whereas like if you tried to buy those tickets like even secondhand online, you'll pay hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars.
Exactly. They're standby. I forgot that you went to New York and I forgot that you had a tour guide, so you would know these things. Like there is the lottery, like, and it's a bigger than, like, because the theater community is so big there and it's so interconnected. It's not like LA or any place else where they only have a few theaters and a few things run. They have multiple like places just kind of like to make money will give these things away. The standby line is the best, is because of the fact that you know where you're going, and sometimes it'll come up bust, right? Like you could sit in the standby line all week and not get anything.
Yeah.
I've heard people do that. I got to see like during that time, I got to see a bunch of
pay people. Some dude $20 a day to just go sit in the standby line.
Somebody right. Like, I guarantee you they're fucking idiots that.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And to just kind of just sit there and wait at a restaurant, having dinner and hearing. But yeah, it's like it's a love for me. It's expensive. It's a very expensive love because
yeah,
like even
we saw Come From Away.
Oh, okay.
Which, if anybody hasn't seen Come From Away, you can watch a movie. Version of it, a film. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it's a film version of the play or if it's actually a movie musical. It's a stage play on Apple Plus.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's fantastic. But there's also something really, really different about actually being in the theater.
The energy is
especially for musicals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's something different. Like if you guys have watched Hamilton on the the Disney Plus like thing that they did, it's good, but
I still have not seen a single second of Hamilton.
You know what? I understand that, especially if you're waiting for it to show up at a place that you can actually go see it. Like
it's played at the Fox in Atlanta a few times, but like I never have anybody to go with, so I'm always just like, well, I'll see it at some point. So
yeah,
you know.
At
this point, I just want to see the high school version of it. You know what I mean? I want to see a bunch of kids doing like the rapping of Hamilton.
Absolutely. Like that would be hilarious because there's always one or two people that are not as great as you would hope that they would be in any show that isn't a Broadway show, right? It's wild. But yeah, like it was one of those things where it's an energy thing. Like I fully feel like since I went to New York in 2001 and 2002 and 2003, like theater show, like it doesn't matter what it happens, like adaptations of them are just, they're not
right. I saw the touring version of Wicked, mm-hmm. and every time I see the trailer for the movie that they aren't calling a musical, I'm just it looks grand and, but like, I'm like, it's not going to capture what seeing that live performance does. And there's also if you're not familiar with the theater, especially for elaborate productions, even touring ones, there's a stagecraft that I've seen Oklahoma. I've seen Oklahoma the musical and I've seen it on the stage.
Yeah.
The movie musical is fine, but like there's things that they do on stage, like showing the like skyline of Oklahoma, like and like a little train like moving across the back of the stage, like to so that it looks like it's at a distance. Like just those in Wicked, there's a lot of stuff like that.
Yes.
And that's so much fun that like the movies can't ever capture stuff like that. I haven't seen Hamilton, but I imagine like there's something to the like I don't call it battle rap, but you know, like where they're kind
It's
of
their energy.
going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like those people in that moment, like they're you're not gonna get like it's not a take. You're not getting a take. You're watching them do this live. And there's just something to that that's like if you understand the craft of all of that, that is so impressive.
It really is, and there's something about like the energy of a production, like the mounting energy of it. I got to like so like I like a, like another one that's very different, but just so much better than the movie is Sweeney Todd. I'm a huge Stephen Sondheim fan, and seeing that production, like I saw it before I saw the movie, and watching the movie, they open it up, but there's something about them opening it up that kills the movie for like that kills the tension of it for me. And it's just like it's like most things, like Sunday in the Park with George, I saw that, and they've never done a like adaptation of it, though I hear that what's his name, Stephen, not Stephen, Jake Gyllenhaal is actually working on an adaptation of it, because he performed it on London, the London stage.
I saw the touring version of the producers. With and actually Alan Ruck was playing Matthew Broderick's part. And it was so great that I actually got psyched to watch the movie version with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
And
And
like, what
Megan
an
Lee.
absolute just disappointment. Like, it's like a thud, man. Like, there's nothing to it, but like I had such a good time watching it live that I was like, oh, it's gonna be great. Like Alan Ruck was great. Like I can't wait to see Matthew Broderick do it. And like the whole time I was just like, it was better with the
Yeah,
other people. But it's just that it's on film and it just loses something. You know, so yeah, I'm jealous that you got to go see Hamilton, but way more jealous that you're going to go see Back to the Future. So
yes. So like that was the thing is that I had completely forgotten to mention to you was that, well, like we buy packages and stuff, and the package that we had has Back to the Future in it. So I'm extremely excited. I've heard things about this. I've heard good things. Like I've heard nothing but good things about the musical. Like they did it right. They adapted it correctly. And that's a tricky thing to do. Like, I know that there's a lot of musicals out there that are like the like there's a whole template of like taking like the theater is having the same problems that movies are having, which is they take existing IP and they turn them into musicals. Most of the time it doesn't work. Mean Girls, I'm sorry guys, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I've seen the stage production, and I've seen the live act, like I've seen the movie
yeah,
production, and I've seen
zero
the original.
interest in it. So,
Yeah, but there are certain ones that actually work, and I've heard that this is one of the ones that actually works. You just gotta have to, like it just has to change the dynamic of it. Like that's always my thing is that as long as you can contain keep the spirit. But change, like you probably have to change it completely, like in the way that it, how it's framed in the framework, like so that you can get things across, but at the same time, it's kind of new, and which I love. Like, I love that. Like, but then the serpent is going to eat the snake, from what I hear, that they're already working on a live, like, actually Zemeckis is working on a remake, or a remake of Back to the Future, which is the musical, to right. which I have to say, okay, I mean, like that's fucking wild.
You got to find a way to, like, there's only, so they won't actually remake the movies.
Yeah.
Until probably when everybody involved is dead, then you'll get a remake, but hopefully we'll be dead by then.
Yeah, seriously.
So you got to find a way to keep mining this property, and they're starting to have exhausted their options. I mean, there's been comic books, there's tons of toy lines. They finally put out the animated series with a box set. I mean, we've gotten the DVD, the Blu-ray, and the 4K box sets. Like, at some point, you got to find another avenue to try to keep this alive and have it still making money for Universal. So it also lessens the remake talk if they're still making money off the original. So I kind of get that. I'll probably watch it if there's like that kind of, you know, adaptation of it, just because it's Back to the Future. But
yeah,
I'm with you on like, you know, it's whatever. There's some stuff that I wish they would like mind that they haven't, which maybe they've tried, but like, I feel like a Ghostbusters musical would be, you know, pretty great.
It definitely would. I would pay to see that. The original Ghostbusters, like the original.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Those characters, you know, like those four. So yeah.
To see like an Egon number would be hilarious. Spores, molds, and funguses. I dream of somebody writing spores, molds, and funguses, because you know that's like a show. I'm not dying, guys. I just it's fucking 7:30 in the morning over here, guys. So, but anywho, I would love that. Actually, probably one of the few, I always tell people, like, the best adaptation of an existing property that turned into a musical that made it even better is, of course, Little Shop of Horrors. Like,
yeah,
that fucking movie. Like, anytime, like, it's the rare exception where anytime I've seen a production, and I've seen a couple of productions of that, it's nowhere near as good as the movie. Like, the movie,
there are two I can think of. So I've never seen like a full on production of Little Shop. I did see a college theater production of Little Shop that I thought was pretty fun, because you have to, like, they have to find ways to really be creative, because they don't have large budgets. But you're right, like, it's not the same as the movie. The other one that I could definitively point to, and maybe it's because I just know it as a movie first and then as a stage musical, but I feel like the many times I've seen it performed on stage back me up, Grease. Grease works. It's what it is, but it's so good as a movie. I've never seen a performance of that on the stage that matches how good it is as a movie.
No, there just isn't. It's weird because I know certain members of my family were big about musicals, and so we got to see a lot of stuff as a kid. That is one.
Grease is one where, as a kid, I knew it was naughty, but like I didn't realize how bad it was until I was an adult. And as an adult, I'm like, I cannot believe my parents ever let me watch this.
Yeah, it's wild, right? Like I think it's because it's the pop songs. It's a poppy thing, and you don't listen to the lyrics. But if you listen to the lyrics and you watch the show, like actually really watch it, you're like, wow, that's kind of, I mean, it's dealing exactly what, like, you know, everybody deals with in the 50s, right? It's like going back to the future, right? Back to the Future, the best part about Back to the Future is that we always thought of, like, the 50s as a sanitized place. And, like, the best part, like, my favorite part about Zemeckis' movie
is like, that immediately, Lorraine's just like, hey, you want to do it?
Yeah. Like, it literally is trying to fuck this kid that she doesn't know it throws out all conventions of what you think of the 1950s.
I don't think that movie gets enough credit for having a, I don't know if you say she's exactly sexually liberated, but it's not a lot of times you see a female character presented as horny, but not in a, like, it where negative things happen to her, you know, like a lot of times it's in like horror movies and, well, she's going to get killed. That's the price you pay for being a horny girl in a horror movie. I don't think, and I, you know, as a guy, it's probably not my place to speak on it, but, or it's definitely not. But like, I don't think that movie gets enough credit for portraying that character in that way. And you know, kind of similarly in Back to the Future Part 2, I also don't think she has her excuse when he goes to the alternate timeline. Like, she does tell Marty, like, why she married Biff, you know, just so that her kids would be taken care of. But, like, I don't think enough attention is paid to that, of, like, her character, really. Like, the sacrifices she's willing to make, but also, like, the wildly independent person she is. And, like, you know, I think she's not appreciated enough for that fact.
She definitely isn't. Like, it's kind of, it's wild to think that, like, if you really look at the story and you look between the lines, especially in the first movie, like, what they say and what they have to, like, what they say about, like, people in the past and your parents, like, it's something very obvious, but it's only obvious because the movie made it obvious, right? Like, the thing of, like, you know, your parents are never, like, your parents are not who you think that they are, because they were just like you, horny, nervous, nerdy kids that, like, loved things. It's just that life has grounded that out of you, right? Like, in 30 years, life will do a lot of grounding out. Like, the most wildest thing that I think about right now is that I am now closer to George and Lorraine's age, because you figure that they're probably about, like, which is wild to me, that they're probably about 50 in the movie, right? Like, they were, like, you know, if you kind of, like, do the reverse math, they're 16, so they would have had to have been born in 20, like, let's see, if they're 16, they would have had to have been born in, like, 39 to make them 16 and 55, so it's 85, so it's, like, they're, oh, man, they're, like, yeah, they're, like, 50, they're, like, 50, or they're, like, 46 or 47, shit, they're my age. That's fucking scary. Like, that's weird and wild. And I think about it, and I'm like, you know, I still have all the feelings that I had as a teenager. It's just they're under control, right? Because my hormones aren't raging anymore. But it's like thinking about that movie and just how genius it is in the layers in each of the movies. Like, even the third one, which I don't think gets enough credit. Like, we used to love the third one and shit on the second one, like, as a pop culture thing. And now the dynamic has shifted, but, like, what I like about the third one is that it's never been about Marty. Marty's always been a cipher, but it's absolutely about Marty in the third one, right? And making stupid fucking decisions and being a teenager, right? And, like, trying to, like, adjust and modify yourself to have a little bit of self-control. Like, you know, Like, it's like you're 16, 17 now. You have to exert some kind of self-control. You can't just go around fucking like, you know, being an asshole to everybody because they crack your ego. It's like a lesson learned. Right. But the first one always, like, I mean, it's a work of genius. And the second one too, because it goes so dark. I love that.
Yeah.
Like I loved it as a kid. Like you and Ryan, like I had a full appreciation for that movie because it was so, you'd never seen a time travel movie do what it does. Like the consequences, like without, like, I think you've said this before, but without Back to the Future 2, there's a slew of, like, most time travel movies, including Avengers Endgame, don't exist. Because it's the groundwork and foundation of those kinds of movies. Time paradoxes and stuff like that didn't really get talked about, except for in literature, right? Like, what's the one Sound of Thunder.
Yeah.
But like, other than that, that's the only time travel like piece before time travel or before part two came out that really dealt with that kind of stuff in a serious nature. Right. And I know that they have said, Gale and Zemeckis have both been on file with saying, yeah, you know what? That was a huge reference point for us, was Sound of Thunder, because the consequences of time travel. Right. In a negative way. And plus, I mean, you know, how can you not love a film that literally predicts our current state? I mean, like, let's be honest, right? Like,
yeah.
Back to the Future 2, like, I mean, there's, like, he, like, it's scary how much he looks like that fucking, that jackass. Like, how
I mean, they do... and lean into, like, that was their inspiration for it.
Yeah.
But like, it is wild that, like, he became like even bigger than he was in the 80s, and so much of it he got elected president.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, we won't get into all that, but yeah, I'm super jealous. I can't wait to hear how Back to the Future is. I know that there's a lot that they changed just to make it as a stage musical, and, you know, have it not be like too pointed in one way or the other. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. So I've heard nothing but good things. Like, there's a podcast I listen to, and one of the guys on it, who's on it occasionally, is a guy named Frank. He's a huge Back to the Future fan and owns a DeLorean. And
oh, wow.
So, like, he saw it on Broadway, and, like, if anybody's going to walk away with problems, it's going to be a Back to the Future fan, and he absolutely loved it. So, I feel like that's going to be a really good time. So, definitely jealous of that. What have I been watching? Oh, Superman and Lois came back this week. It's hitting its final season.
So question for you. Did they drop all of the episodes? Okay. So thank God they're not, like, I'm going to say something like that I feel like people will not understand unless, you know, they've either listened to us or they understand, like, the way that streaming works. When you, like, I'm glad they didn't dump all the episodes, because I always feel like that is the end point, is when Max drops things and they just drop.
Oh, it's not even on Max. It's only airing on CW. So, like, if you, it will not be streaming anywhere outside of the CW until after this season finishes. So, like,
okay.
Which is equally as bad as just being like, we're giving you a final season, we're just going to dump all the episodes on Max all at one time. Like, having it is the CW show, but also you can only watch it on the CW. So, like, it's all complicated, like, ridiculous thing that still shoots the show in the foot. So, like, yeah. If you follow any of the producers, creators, creatives behind the show, it has been very tumultuous for them. Their budget was slashed, like, so much that, like, even, like, regular guest stars that they had in previous seasons, people that weren't in every episode just popped up here and there, basically had to be told, like, we're not going to be able to have you back for the final season because we don't have the money to pay you. So, like, they gave them 10 episodes, cut the budget immensely, and then, I don't know, it's so spiteful. Like, I get it is, you know, the CW wants to move in a different direction, no more of these superhero shows. But, like, it's also a damn shame because this is a really, really good show. It might be the single best live-action adaptation of Superman we've had outside of the first two Chris Reeve movies.
Wow, that's really bold. Like, I mean, but also, like, I know this is going to sound terrible, not that difficult. Like there's, like, this steep drop off of quality, right? After you get Superman 2, and then, and that includes Man of Steel. And I'm a fan of Man of Steel. I would say, like, that's, like,
I do like, we're in that camp. We both appreciate that movie, but I think we'd also point to it and go, like, it's one of those that feels like, it's not a Superman movie. It's more of like an Elseworlds Superman movie.
Yes, very much.
With, like, this Superman and Superman and Lois, like, he's a father. So that adds a new wrinkle to it. There's family drama, but, like, he's so full of hope. And, like, he has that nerdy charm as Clark, but also that super confident charm as Superman. Like, he really, really gets it. The last season ended with Lex creating Doomsday, which they did extremely well. I feel like they blew most of their budget on this season, just having a fairly comic accurate and also not cheesy at all looking version of Doomsday. Like, when you see him, it doesn't look bad.
No, it doesn't. Like, I've seen, like, they've promoted the the weird part is that on social media, they promoted the shit out of this show. And the thing that they've promoted the most is the Supes versus Doomsday fight. And it literally looks like film quality, like a film level quality, like CGI.
Like, I mean, it really looks better than the shit we got in Justice.
Yes. League. Oh my god. Or BVS, whatever the hell they call it.
Yeah.
Like that version of Doomsday looks so crappy. Like, I've played video games that had better graphics from 2002 than that movie did. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I've seen the trailers. I've watched the first season. I really liked it. It's just that it's hard because there's so much damn shit out there. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, I'm
an hour-long drama is hard to, like, especially when it's a show you know depends on you. Like there's a chronology there, and, like, you have to, especially when the first season was airing, you had that, you had Supergirl was still on the air, The Flash was still on the air, I think Arrow was wrapping up or about to wrap up, Legends of Tomorrow was still, like, it was entrenched in all of that stuff, and you get to a level, like, it didn't constantly like crossover with that stuff, but you start feeling like I'm not watching all those other shows. I can't make time for this because then something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden I have to go back and watch 3 seasons of Arrow and 2 seasons of The Flash. And then, like, it's just like, that's a lot, man. So like, I get it. I was watching all that stuff. So it's not really anything, wasn't anything extra for me. But I love this version of Superman. I really do. I think he does such a good job. I think she's a really great Lois, like seeing them as parents. And like, there was, I guess spoilers for the episodes, but I mean, it's dealing with the Doomsday storyline. So if you know anything about Superman Doomsday, you kind of know what happens. He kills Superman. That's what he's for. So Lex has kind of met, like, of course he's made it his mission to kill Superman, but he's also trying to ruin Lois's life because she ruined his. And so, like, not only does he kill Superman, he finds out that Superman is Clark, that they're married, that they have 2 kids. One of them has powers. And, like, he does this, like, totally fucked up thing where he puts both of her kids in danger and then calls her and basically does this thing where he's like, one of your sons is about to die and you need to tell me which, like, but not in a him talking way. It's that, like, you know, when you call a number and you have to, like, choose options, like, press English. So like this, she gets a phone call and it's like, your sons are in danger. One of them is going to die. Press 1 for this kid, press 2 for this kid. And like, she does make a choice and it doesn't tell you who she chooses. I will spoil it and say that neither one of them die, but it, like, that the show does something like that, you know, and now she has to, now not only is her husband dead, she made a choice about something that she now has to live with, that I'm sure Lex has logged and will somehow use against her and pit her, like, her own children against her. Like, it's so well written that, like, the shortcomings are really easy to overlook. Like, especially this season. Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens in Smallville. Smallville here, even though it is a small town, feels about as populated as Tim Burton's Gotham City. Like, there's 4 people in the whole town. But it is because of budget constraints. I get it. But it's really, really good. I can't think of the actor's name, but he was in The Walking Dead. He was one of the dudes that Negan killed, the red-haired guy.
I was going to say the blonde-haired guy, but I know who you, I know who you're talking about because I've seen
Michael. He plays something. Lex.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's doing, it's a different Lex than you've ever seen. Like, we've never truly had a physically imposing Lex Luthor. And
yeah,
this guy definitely, I mean, he's physically imposing.
Which is kind of interesting. That is super interesting because, like, it's always been about, like, not physical. It's always been like mind versus brawn with, like, or at least that's right. How it's always been posed to us. This is very different because he is, like, I know who you're talking about.
He's smart and he's not as strong as Superman, obviously, but, like, he's big. And so when he's, like, towering over Lois, it's not, it feels imposing. It's not just like her standing up to this guy who is smarter than everybody else in the room. He could also punch you and, I mean, just knock you out. So
yeah,
he looks like if Lex Luthor was part of a biker gang. It's really, really good. And part of me is glad it's come to an end, but also like, I hate how shitty the network has been to them. So
and it's also, his name is Michael Kudlitz. That's who plays Lex Luthor. And again, you know him from Walking Dead and about 35 other shows that are made in Canada. You know exactly who he is when you see him. You're like, oh, that dude. He was there, in Southland.
There is a flashback scene. There is a flashback. So most of the first episode involves the Doomsday fight and some stuff going on with Lois and the kids. And so what they keep doing is flashing back. Lois keeps remembering their life, like building up to this. So she remembers meeting Clark, meeting Superman, falling in love with Clark, getting married to Clark, having a kid with, or twins with Clark, her and Clark going up against Lex Luthor, putting him in prison, and like all of this stuff that's kind of, it's a previously on, but none of that stuff was actually previously on the show. It's all stuff that they've just talked about. So it's really heartfelt and like done really, really well. But there was a scene with Lex where Lois and Lex are having a confrontation, and he's trying to kill an article that will basically put him in prison, and he's trying to threaten her out of it. And they show him with a full head of hair, and it's clearly a wig. And it's so jarring that it made me laugh. That's the one thing that I was just like, oh, y'all should have just left him bald. I get why you wanted to do that. 'Cause it's like,
yeah,
present any more business-like before he goes to prison. And but like it's such a goofy looking wig that I was just like, yeah, you should just left him bald. Like it's so goofy. But I'm excited to see how they do the return of Superman, because clearly the show's called Superman and Lois. He's not gonna stay dead. They do make it really, really difficult and very heartfelt when he's quote dead. It's going to be a good final season, I think. And I wish they'd given him 13 instead of 10, but I mean, it is what it is. They've said that it's going to bring a really good close to what most people consider the Arrowverse, which this was more or less part of. And it feels weird that whole chapter of DC will now be completely done, but it's, you know, probably for the better. Let's all just move on, even though there's still like this whole Matt Reeves version of the DC universe that we're still leaning into. Which I mean, I know we've talked about the Penguin, but like, whew, man, it's so good. It's so good. Like, I cannot believe how good that show is.
Yeah, I haven't seen the latest episode, so we're gonna have to do that just for another week, because I feel like we're coming to an end, right? This is episode 5, right? Or is this episode 4?
No, it's only 4, because remember there was a skip week, because it premiered on a Wednesday. Then they didn't have an episode that next Sunday. Then had an episode. We're not even, I don't even think we're halfway through. So is it 8 or 10 episodes?
I think it's 8.
We might be about halfway through.
Boy, yeah. I have not seen the next episode. Just because busy. But We will talk about that. But I did want to talk about something related because it's a little bit more newsworthy, is that we're starting to get our cast together for Lanterns, this big budget Green Lantern show. And I wanted to like literally talk about it because we kind of texted about it, but I'd rather have a discussion because it's actually very intriguing, the two casts that they got. Like, so initially
Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. Kyle Chandler as
Hal Jordan.
And now we have
Aaron Pierre as Stewart. Like, to be perfectly honest, like I love that Josh Brolin decided to pass on Hal Jordan, because Kyle Chandler like feels like the cop version of Hal Jordan that I kind of want to see with somebody like Aaron Pierre.
You need that for Hal. Even if you don't do the spoilers for comics, if you don't do the villainous parallax turn with Hal, you still need that guy who's it's very Captain America-esque, right? Where it's like, he's a goody two shoes, but also he's a goody two shoes that I'd like, I'd suit up and I'd follow him into hell.
Yes. And Kyle Chandler has that kind of quality to him. Like, I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for how fucking good he is at what he does. Because let's be honest, like, how many people can do Gary Cooper? Zero. Like, I don't know any, like, other than Chris Evans, right? But he already took, like, I mean, could you imagine the Altverse where we get, like we get that Chris as Green Lantern? Like, is there, like, if he does the Green Lantern movie, do we even have him in the universe because he's so goddamn good at being that kind of particular kind of character?
I mean, is it the same Green Lantern? Is it the exact same script and film that we got? But instead of Ryan Reynolds, it's Chris Evans. If so, it might sink Chris Evans' career.
It might, but like, I feel like that Green Lantern is totally a product of Ryan
Reynolds. Oh yeah,
it's totally a product of Ryan Reynolds. You get Chris Evans in that, and they don't do that script. They just really don't. Because
he's not that kind of smart-assy, like, no. I mean, he can try to be, but, like, you know, it's you know.
There's a reason, there's a reason why Fantastic Four failed, is because, like, it's so disingenuous. You watch it now, and you go, man, Chris Evans is kind of terrible as that particular kind of asshole.
Well, it's not... It's not fun to watch him. Like, it's...
No!
He plays a good asshole, but that's the problem, is it's not, like, the asshole that you want to be friends with. Like, most of the time, it's like, Ben Grimm should probably punch a hole in his chest. Because he's just such a dickhead. And that is who that character is, but there is some heart to it. And, like, I don't think Evans ever really got to the heart. Maybe it's a product of the script, but, like, I never felt like there was any real heart to it. The hot-headed dickhead, yes, but not the heartfelt stuff that Johnny can really exhibit when he has to. So... Yeah. Yeah. So here's a question for you. So this cast for Lanterns is great.
Yes.
And I hope the show, it's going to be a show, right?
Yeah. I hope it's a show. Because
it's been a show and a movie and a show and a movie.
Yeah.
So why, I was talking about this with a friend of mine at work, Micah, and we talk about all kinds of comic book stuff, and we're both really excited for this. And he brought up the point, why have we had so many, just since Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern, we've had multiple people take the role of Superman, multiple attempts at Superman as a franchise, movies, TV, animated series, whatnot. We've had multiple Batman. We've even had somebody come back as Batman.
Yes.
We have had multiple Flashes. We have had multiple, well, we've only had one Wonder Woman. We've had multiple versions of a lot of DC's big characters. What the hell was it about that one thing that killed, so much so that they made, write it out of Justice League? Why that character? Of all of DC's characters, this Green Lantern is definitely the one that you should be able to just like, oh, well, that version didn't work. Let's move on. Because even if you don't do Hal Jordan, you can do so many other Green Lanterns.
You really can. And I don't honestly know, other than I feel like it's weird because I feel like, is it a budgetary thing? Like, are they that cheap? Like, it doesn't seem like they're cheap. They spent a fucking shit ton of money on all of these fucking movies.
They spent a lot of money just CGIing out a mustache in Justice League.
Yeah.
Like,
which is the epic troll of Tom Cruise of all time. Like, no, he's not going to shave the mustache. We're going to keep the mustache on because that's the character in the movie. And just makes it that much harder, right? Like, I fucking love that. I love when people get petty about things in Hollywood. But, like, literally, I don't understand. Like, it's either, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing. Like, for me, like, in this era, and, like, when I first started reading Green Lantern, it was Kyle Rayner, and I fucking hated that kid. I hated that kid so much. So even when I was an angry teenager, I hated him. I stopped reading Green Lantern, right? And then it was like going back to read all the rest of them. Guy Gardner with his goddamn bowl haircut, a page boy haircut, I just can't do. I can't do the funniness. I can't do the weirdness. Sorry. Hal Jordan, okay, he's okay. It wasn't until the 90s, the mid-90s, when Jon Stewart showed up in the animated series that I started to like Green Lantern. And I liked that version of Green Lantern.
A lot of people, that's who Green Lantern is.
Right?
So, when Ryan Reynolds was Green Lantern, a lot of people who, like, just didn't really come from the comics were like, why is Green Lantern a white guy?
Yeah. And I feel like that is the problem. I know that sounds shitty of me to say that, but I feel like that's the fucking problem.
If you give a decent script about, like, this lantern crashing on Earth, and a young black man like finds him, gets the ring, and you have that story rather than like this smarmy pilot.
Yeah,
it's a much different movie, probably a better movie. But hey, you know, we got Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively from Green Lantern, so I guess it did have its good parts.
I guess,
to it.
Yeah. But to be like, the short answer of it is that they were having like this DCEU has never been the most toxic free environment, and like, I honestly feel like that was a decision that was made from an executive level. As marketing, as no, like the real, like it's like, yeah, Green Lantern has to be Jon Stewart, right? And that's what probably most of fandom wants. But the metrics and the toxic fandom has stopped that from happening. That's honestly what I feel like it is that, like, in that era, like the Snyderverse bros, man, they are they're still the shittiest people in the world, and they say the shittiest things. And I can only imagine what they're saying online about Jon Stewart being the, from what I understand, Jon Stewart is the actual lead of the Lanterns show or movie or whatever the fuck it they're trying to make it be. That's the rumor. And that's like, that's part of the reason why Josh Brolin didn't want to do the show, was because it's a big co-starring role, but it is still a co-starring role. It's
I'm with you. I'm glad, like, I like him, but I really like these three guys.
Yes.
As the cast. Like, I did make a comment to you, like, it's really funny seeing, especially James Gunn say, welcome to the DCU, Aaron Pierre. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, he was already here, guys. Like, there was this show on Sci-Fi called Krypton that I guess just me and Ryan watched. Mm-hmm. That's really fucking good. Like, I think you can get the complete series on DVD or Blu-ray for like $30. Absolutely fucking worth it. Like, there are so many low-key, like, versions. Krypton's one. There was a show on Fox called The Gifted that was, like, their attempt at doing an X-Men-related TV show that's really, also really, really good. Stuff like that that, like, nobody remembers. I was going to say Legion, but I don't know that Legion's forgotten, but...
And it goes so outside the boundaries of what we consider. Like, not even, like, within comic book, but just narratively.
It is fun to see a lot of people losing their shit over, like, deliciously Aubrey Plaza. And I'm like, I'm with you guys, but I saw this already. There was a show called Legion, and I've seen this version of her, and it's great, but I've already seen this. You guys were missing out. Also, Amber Midthunder, like, her blowing up as an actress, right? And I'm like, like, when Legion was on the air, I was like, who is this chick? Because she needs to be a superstar, because she's amazing.
She really is. She really is. I mean, and thus proved herself in her own movie with Prey. Like, with the Lantern stuff, like Aaron Pierre, like, all you guys need to do is go ahead and watch, like, please go watch Rebel Ridge, and you will understand exactly why he's playing Jon Stewart. Like, that's like, it feels like the dry run for Jon Stewart and everything that he stands for. Like,
the one thing about Aaron Pierre that I'll say. I really like him. He was great in Krypton, but one of the things that makes him so not a good actor, but, like, you see him and you go, you're drawn to him, is he has this otherworldly look to him.
The eyes. Those weird the seafoam colored eyes, like, which works perfectly for Stewart when he puts the mask on, because you really
it's a little weird when he's not. That's why he worked in Krypton. He looks otherworldly. And so you're just like, oh, you just have this natural, like you look human, but also you look like you're not from here. So I don't know how that's gonna work when he's not a Green Lantern. Like, it's gonna be great when he's in costume. Like, a dude walking around like that, like, if you saw him in person, you'd just be like, you'd just be staring at him all the time. He's like, there's something about that guy, man. Like, not in a bad way, in an absolutely great way, but he's not like unnoticeable. Like, he doesn't really blend in.
There are
he doesn't have an everyman quality. So
no, he's a movie star, right? Like, and he has that movie star quality, and that goes to his looks. It's like, in a weird
Billion way, and Chandler definitely have everyman, like,
yes,
qualities to them. So
oh, absolutely. Especially fucking Philly, you know? I mean, yeah. We've seen the set picks. I literally want to see him in motion. Like, I want to see Guy Gardner in motion, and I want to see the kind of interpretation. Are we getting a goofy one? I mean, it's Philly, and so I feel like that's what we're getting.
Yeah, I think it's going to really play into Guy Gardner being a prick. Like, because he was the Jason Todd kind of sort of Green Lanterns, where it's just like,
I always thought that Kyle Rayner or whatever the hell his name is was the dickhead, not Guy Gardner. But that makes sense. That tracks.
Like, Guy was definitely the more like bullish, like shitty kind of jerk of the Green Lanterns. Gotcha. Kyle was just a kid. So
yeah, he literally was. He was just like, I mean, I guess he was Tim Drake, right? Like, I'm not the biggest fan of Tim Drake, unless we're talking about Young Justice, Tim Drake, like in any form. Like, he never worked for me. Other than the first, wasn't he the very first Robin in the first Robin series back in the 80s or back in the 90s?
Yeah, so Tim Drake was, yeah, he was the first Robin to have his own series.
Yeah, okay, so that series run and Young Justice, I like Tim Drake. Anything else that I've ever seen him in, I'm, you know, give me Damian. Because at least Damian, it makes sense, right? Like, it doesn't make, like Damian makes sense, more sense to me now as I get older than anybody else. Because it just, like, like, we're in an era now where it's like, wow, that's real big child endangerment, motherfucker. I mean, not to say that the billionaire cares about anything. He, like, you know, he's traumatized and refuses to get a bit of therapy. But it's also just like the way that they're presented. I think it's a weird thing that I'm kind of talking about right now, like my preferences of characters and who I feel is like I mean, everybody has them. The defining, like, you know, they're defining versions of characters, which that's another thing that I feel like DC has this parachute right now, because multiple people have played multiple characters have inhabited multiple hero suits. You don't have to necessarily cast recast it. You can cast it with a different person, right?
Yeah. Like
a different character, which works for that. I always find it funny that Marvel kind of has that a little bit, but not in the big way that DC has it. Which also creates a problem when, say,
Marvel stuff is less of a mantle. Like, DC's big characters, it always comes, like, it's the mantle of the bat, it's the mantle of the wearing the S, it's the mantle of being Wonder Woman, it's the mantle of being the Flash. Like, it's not the, like, it's so funny that Spider-Verse gets credit for the, like, anybody can be in the suit thing, when it's DC as a whole has been pushing that envelope.
Yep.
70, 80 years, maybe longer. You know, like, Bruce Wayne is still Batman. Like, Kal-El is still Superman. Clark Kent, Superman. Like, those characters do still exist, but those mantles do, like, exist in other forms. They do get passed to other people. You know, Marvel doesn't do that a lot.
Yeah. There's not multiple Iron Mans. When somebody takes on the...
Yeah, there have been two. And then he just became the War Machine.
Exactly. Because he had too many goddamn missiles and guns. You're like... And he was owned by the military. So it's like, nah, we can't call him Iron Man. Let's call him War Machine.
There have been... Captain America has passed the mantle. Like we just said, Iron Man in a way. There have been a few instances, but, you know, there's a passing of the mantle of Spider-Man. Their characters don't present that way for the most part. It's really, really interesting. It's It's going to be interesting to see how they do, like, why the fuck does Earth have three Green Lanterns? Which is something that like, in the comics, it's like, oh, you're the Green Lantern of Sector blah, 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 blah. Why the hell does this planet have three Green Lanterns?
Four,
if you count Kyle Rayner.
Or is it a, like, I know that, okay, so, like, we know that Gunn loves certain kinds of tropes. Is it going to be a time travel show?
I mean, yeah, because, it could be.
Because if you do the time travel show thing, or
spread across multiple generations, that would be interesting. So it would be kind of cool to see, like, Kyle Chandler as Hal Jordan, like, test pilot in, like, the 50s, Green Lantern, like, stuff. That'd be really, really interesting.
Right? Because, and then, like, Jon Stewart, like, and you get these multiple timelines, maybe every episode, or maybe a different timeline each episode, and by the end of the season, all of a sudden, time travel comes in, and you, like, you get all three of them, maybe even four with Kyle, intersecting and having to team up to do something, to take something down, like maybe Sinestro, like something like that. That would be fun, because then it becomes this whole, it's still a cop show, because I mean, in essence, Lanterns has always been a cop, like, right? Like, they're cops, cops, army, whatever you want to say. But if they're like, say Sinestro is going through the timeline and killing off the Lanterns, all of the Lanterns everywhere, and acquiring their power and just making them greater and greater, maybe that's the thing, right? I don't know. Like, I'm excited. I, like you said, like, I like the idea of, okay, so you're casting all of these guys as Lanterns. Why are you fucking doing this? Because why are there multiple human, you know, when, like, you know, multiple human Lanterns when there's only supposed to be one person for one sector, right?
Yeah. And
the Earth sector is very small. But anywho, I'm excited just because of the cast. Like, this cast, like I'm very excited about, and I'm also, like, I'm hoping, and this is the big thing for me, is that I'm hoping that Gunn has been allowed to throw a huge budget after it. Because it is it's the equivalent, but not, of Guardians in the DC universe. Like, it's cosmic. You go a lot of different planets. It's very Star Trek-y. Like, you know, and you don't get the good stuff. Like, you don't get a good TV series by chintzing out on that, by cheaping up that and just filming, like, whatever, like, on a minuscule budget. I mean, you literally need a Game of Thrones style budget, right? And I'm almost wondering if a $200 million movie is not as palpable as a $200 million show that you have 10 episodes of, right? And you can do something really big. It makes it the flagship, because you've set the standard with Penguin, right? We were recently talking, like, Penguin is not just beautifully shot, it's beautifully executed, and it doesn't feel cheap. You know what I mean? Like Matt Reeves made sure that he's like, if I'm involved with this and we're going to do this, we're going to spend the money. We have to spend the money to make sure that it's an accompanying piece to my Batman series.
Yeah.
And so I just hope it's like one of those things where, like, oh yeah, we're throwing Game of Thrones money at it because we have these people and we have a chance to do something special. That's my hope. But it's Max, it's HBO, Warner Brothers. I mean, you know, it's kind of weird. We still have to, like, we're literally 8 months out from Superman. And I mean, we all know that Superman's out there, but we haven't seen a lick of footage. Like, that's just kind of weird to me.
There'll be a trailer at the Super Bowl. Like, I think they're gonna, we might get a teaser sometime at Christmas, but I think we'll get a big trailer for the Super Bowl. I think they'll just keep playing, and maybe smartly so, playing everything super, super close to the vest.
Okay. I mean, I can see that. because you want it to be the right time.
I also think James Gunn is having a lot of fun with like the quote set leak videos, and like I think he's really confident about what he's doing. So the negative stuff that keeps coming up whenever like photos from the set or like that one like teaser photo that he put out, like I think he's kind of reveling in negative feedback from either people who just want to be negative or from the people who are still lamenting that Snyder didn't get to do all the stuff he wanted to do. And when that trailer drops, I think he's really confident, so that when the trailer hits, he's going to just be able to sit back and be like, yeah, all you had to do is wait.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I mean, he's worked up to this, like, you know, and I mean, I have faith in him. Like, I just find it's weird. Warner Brothers, like we both know, Warner Brothers is just, they bungle everything. Like they touch things and it goes to shit. Right?
I think part of him being part of, or him taking on the reins and being the Kevin Feige of the DCU is the non-interference stuff. Like stuff that he's not involved with.
Mm-hmm. Joker.
Yeah. He doesn't care. Like, yeah. And he doesn't have much to say on it, but like all the stuff he's been involved. I mean, we're not that far out from Creature Commandos. We just got a trailer not too long ago. And I mean, other than like basic stuff, we really don't know that much about the show. So yeah, I think he's just playing everything close to the vest, and I can appreciate that. So, I'm still excited for whatever his version of the DCU is going to be. Lanterns especially, but yeah, definitely Superman, and I don't know, we'll see. I brought up Aubrey Plaza a minute ago. You're not caught up on Penguin. Are you caught up on Agatha All Along?
Yes, I'm definitely caught up on that. I wanted to ask just because there's a lot of like chattery going on about the ending. Can we just start with that and confirm with me, like, we do know now that it's officially he's
Wiccan. He's Wanda's
son. Wiccan. Yeah, he's Wanda's.
I mean, unless they do another reversal. And I fucking love this show, man. It is the least expensive show Marvel has ever done. So I can appreciate that. I was reading an interview and they were talking about how most of the stuff is practical. They don't do a lot of digital. They try to keep it very minimal, and just let the cast do all the heavy lifting and selling of the special effects and whatnot. And I think it absolutely works for that. They play into their strengths and they just like quickly glide past anything that they know they're not going to be strong about, which is, a lot of that is like digital effects. So the big reveal for the episode is that, so the previous episode ends with, Aubrey Plaza's character telling Agatha, that's not your son.
Yeah.
Like, and you knew the whole time Agatha was kind of holding out this hope that, like, am I going to be able to reunite with the kid that I had to give up or that I gave up for power? Like, can I correct this mistake, or maybe there's something else to it? And, like, they were definitely, like, leading you away from, oh, this is Wiccan. But then like the reveal at the end, when she says, you are so much like your mother. It's so good, man.
There's so many layers to that. Like, I love the fact that we now know that who laid the curse. It was her. She laid them because as soon as she figured out, like, I love that it's the it's a recall to error. It's a callback to a very small bit of dialogue about the curse or about the it is a curse, right? Like you couldn't hear
it. Yeah, they call it something. I can't remember what it's called though.
But like, it's Patti LuPone's character who says the only way that can be broken is when the timing is right and the person that the person that laid that curse is ready to reveal what they know. And even though that person doesn't know that they laid it because it's between those two, that moment you instantly go, oh shit, she's ready. It's right. It's the right time. Damn, that's good. That's great writing. Like, that's just seriously great writing. You can't take away, like, I don't understand why more people are not loving this show, because it's so well written in multiple layers and so much fun to watch their play on certain visual tropes. But yeah, no, going back to like this whole, like the whole situation with Weekend, do we think that because the way it's played, like Agatha seems like she's going to be full on villain now at this point. Do we think that is the case, or
do we think? I don't know, man. Like, yes, but I much like in WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding it hard to root against her, even though yes. She technically would be the villain.
But also, Wiccan does something pretty gnarly to his coven that has been nothing but other than her. She's been always like kind of like an asshole to him. But he literally, like, I mean, we know that he doesn't kill them. We know that they're going to get out of something, right? But literally, definitely, the coven, like what's left of the coven is gone now because he literally fucking kills them. He literally puts them into that multi whatever sludge quicksand on the road and just leaves them for dead for him to go ahead and continue on down the road, right?
Yeah.
Do we think that his ultimate plan is to find his mother?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I think. That's what I think. I mean, so her kids were not real in WandaVision.
No.
That was the whole thing. Like, they maybe existed. I mean, we find out in Doctor Strange in some universe they existed. But in this version of the MCU, she never had kids. Like, it was all her magic creating this. So that this is Billy is like a question in and of itself. What version of Billy is this? Is he from this universe? Like, it is like part of her last dying gasp of magic to make her sons real? Like, there's so many questions there that, and clearly, I think clearly he knows who he is. He knows who his mother is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, there's a lot of questions there. And it's so well done, like, to exist on its own and also now open up, like, different avenues for the magics of the Marvel Universe. I mean, there's so many places it could go. And I don't know. I really love this show. And I'm glad it's not getting the treatment that She-Hulk got, which I also loved She-Hulk. But, like, I do understand some of the problems with She-Hulk, but I didn't understand the venom that was spewed at it. I'm like, the show is so innocuous. I don't know why people are so upset by it.
Yeah, it was a wrong. I mean, Jesus Christ, what was wrong with that? A wrong kind of existed, but didn't exist in this universe. I mean, they literally had a robot, Kevin Feige. How can you not love a show that does that? Like, fucking book, man. I love She-Hulk. I thought it was hilarious. Did you see
Disney release the numbers for the first week?
No, they actually released the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, this is what they said, but I mean, okay. I guess I got the data back it up. First 7 days, the first episode of Agatha All Along hit 9.3 million views, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, Penguin is doing less. Penguin did less. I think like million. I mean, are they expecting like, what are they expecting from? Like, are they?
I don't know. I don't think they would release that number if they weren't happy with it.
Like, they weren't confident in that number.
So, let's see. I'm trying to see what WandaVision did.
And that was peak television. That was, like, super peak where everybody was watching anything new that we could get.
See, February 12th, 2021. Oh, no, this is 400 million views. That's a lot.
That's
a lot. Well, that's wrong.
That has to be wrong.
February 16th, 2021, Nielsen, 6.5 million for...
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, that's a 2 million view difference. But WandaVision had a, like, there was a lot of shit leading up to it. Like, Disney Plus is just, like, getting its feet. So, like, it's a big thing. And,
yeah,
like, it's starring major Marvel characters that were in multi. Like, this is a show that only has ties to another show that doesn't feature any of the characters from that show except the bad guy. To hit that number, I think is really, really good. I definitely think Disney's happy with that because it's also the least expensive thing they've done Marvel wise on Disney Plus.
Yeah, which, I mean, let's be honest. Like, it's also probably, like, I don't care if I get shit for this, but it's probably the best thing that Marvel has done on TV in a while. Like, consistently through and through. Like, there's things that maybe I like more, but this, since WandaVision, this is like the best thing quality-wise.
Hawkeye, WandaVision, and unless they completely botch the ending, I think Agatha. Like, that's top three for me.
I completely agree with you on that. Because everything else was bunk. Like, very bunk. Like, especially Secret Wars. I mean, I think that we're going to go to our grave just, damn you, Secret Wars!
it will be very difficult for them to ever hit the low lows of, Secret Invasion. Not Secret
Wars. Yeah, Secret Invasion. It's not Secret Wars. It's Secret Invasion. Sorry. Thank you.
So.
But, yeah. I mean, it's good. Like, I loved the character work. Because that's ultimately what you care about, right? In any of these things, is the character work. And it's so good. It's so dynamic. And it's so willing to go. Like, I know this is going to be a weird thing to say, but it's the first thing I've seen from Marvel where they decided to go, like, not super sexual, but sexual enough to where you go, huh, that's interesting. They haven't done that before. And make it very obvious that people have had certain kinds of relationships and they're not all kind of clean. Like the whole thing between like Wanda and Vision, it's like, I felt the love, but I didn't feel like there was a, like, I know it sounds weird, but a carnality there, but between
Loki might be under, actually Loki might be my favorite.
Season two is really good.
So here are the shows: WandaVision, Falcon, Winter Soldier, Loki, What If, Hawkeye, Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, Secret Invasion, Echo, and Agatha. So, I mean, for me, the ultimate stinker is Secret Invasion, but like, yeah. Moon Knight was like, I wanted it to be good, and it started so good. It just really shit the bed. Falcon Winter Soldier, I give that show a lot of leeway because the show we got was not the show that they made. They had to, like, it was so expensive because they had to go back and refilm essentially the entire show. Hawkeye's just so damn fun. Like,
yeah, it's literally Hawkeye in a Shane Black movie. That's literally what it is. Like, and how can you go wrong with that? A Christmas time action film, like that's like basically a 3 hour action film, because that's what it is. I mean, like, yeah, it's really good. And like I think what makes that show for me is having Yelena there, and Florence Pugh before Florence Pugh was Florence Pugh. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like she's risen so much since that. So much so that she's the de facto lead of Thunderbolts.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see her and Bucky kind of just go at each other.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. That's true. Like, didn't even think about like what if, like, okay, so like I think my tops would be in order would be WandaVision, Loki, What If, Miss Marvel, and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Because I really fucking loved... I love
Agatha. Me too. And Agatha could... Like, we're only about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
Something could happen in the back half of Agatha that catapults it, like, far above and beyond the rest. Mainly because almost without fail, even the good Marvel TV shows, by the time you get to the last two episodes, it's just not. It's a CGI slugfest. Yeah, they completely run out of steam. They don't know how to wrap it up because they're constantly stuck in this loop of like, we can't have any real finality because it has to lead into the next thing. Agatha has a chance to really, really break that. I think Loki did for season two, and I appreciate that. I think Agatha has a chance to really, really jump ahead in all of that. And with also opening the door for like so many pieces of the Marvel universe that are not explored, and bringing in characters that you necessarily don't need big screen adaptations of, but like there's a lot of little shit in Marvel that would make for great television, you know. Like, there is there was a book, so we know what the Darkhold is. Like, we saw it in WandaVision. Mm-hmm. It was a big part of Doctor Strange, and it's more or less part of this show. It also showed up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but there's debate on whether that's canon. So, there at some point, the Darkhold gets destroyed in the Marvel comics, and its pages are like scattered. And there was this group, the book was called The Darkhold Redeemers, and it was a group of people who were trying to basically keep the Darkhold from being reassembled, but also inadvertently reassembling it themselves. And
almost like that's a Forest Dark.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting premise for a show. You know, it's just shit like that that like could make for really fun television, and that this show could open the door for that. You know, I don't want to get my hopes up, but I also, like, I really want it to just stick the landing. Even if it doesn't open up any other doors, just stick the landing, please.
So. Yeah, because, like, realistically, I mean, if I'm honest, like, the only two shows that stick the landing that I like are WandaVision and Loki. And that's why they're number one and number two. Because Ms. Marvel, What If, and Hawkeye all suffer from the same thing that we're talking about. Like, all the shows except for those two suffer from that whole thing of, like, we don't stick the landing. And it's not that they don't stick
but the... I think Hawkeye, they were just trying to leave the door open.
Door open.
And not so much that they didn't stick the landing. But, and you say WandaVision, I, like... And we record, or not you and I, but when I think it was me and Elizabeth recorded episodes, like, and I, like, I'm on record as, like, I don't like this ending. I didn't like the Vision slugfest thing. I had a lot of problems with the ending of WandaVision. It also does the whole, like, leave the door open thing with the promise of, like, resolving it in Doctor Strange, but then I don't love the conclusion we get to with Doctor Strange. So, mostly because she leaves that show feeling a little bit, like, not redeemed, but definitely resolved to do better. And then we pick up in Doctor Strange and she's still just batshit insane. It feels disingenuous to, like, where the character winds up. I mean, hell, this whole show could just be, like, them bringing the Scarlet Witch back. And I'm okay with that, too. Like, if that's the end result of the show, is Billy somehow finding a way to resurrect his mother, like, cool. Great.
Well, and also, if we get Elizabeth, I want to say Elizabeth Shue, but it's not Elizabeth Shue, but she would have made a great WandaVision back in the Elizabeth Olsen. If we get Elizabeth Olsen back into the fold and we get two episodes with her, which is not out of the, like, it's not out of like I don't think, like, so, like, if the whole thing of budgetary issues was because they had to pay Lizzie Olsen, like, her fee to appear in Agatha All Along, and the reason why they decided to go lo-fi with it, like, and solve it with writing and sharp writing and stuff, like, I'm all for that. Because, like, the whole, like, if you go big and you reveal that Scarlet Witch has come back into the universe, and it's Agatha All Along is the, like, you know, the method that you used to get her in back in, I'm all for that. That works for me because, like, that makes Agatha All Along a part of the WandaVision cycle, right? Because I don't know if, like, if they don't have that, like, because I've been thinking about this, like, because it's a big issue, right? Sticking the landing on these last ones, or not the last ones, but, like, with these shows, sticking the landing. And it doesn't have to, like you were saying, it doesn't have to be, like, a definitive ending. It just has to land with both feet exactly where it needs to go, like, and a purpose, and it ends the story satisfyingly. That would satisfy it, because this is like the continuation, even though they haven't said it, this is the continuation of WandaVision, right? Because it's under a different name, but it's the same series, and we're going to get Vision Quest in a year and a half, right? Like, they're going to start filming at the beginning of the year, from what I understand. And they're all from the same showrunner, Jack Schaefer. So I would absolutely want that, because then that continues on the series. That makes this all a part of one unifying series about... Like, it's just the focus a little different. Like, I would love that. Let's see if they can do that, right? Like, let's see if they can stick that landing. Or if they're not going to give that landing, give us something else that lands. Like, whatever it may be. It's like, it wasn't surprising to me because, like, I think I said the first time we talked about this, I'm like a huge Catherine Hahn fan. So, like, I was going to enjoy it for her and Aubrey Plaza regardless, because they don't like, their work is always sterling. The thing that they're in might be a turd, but they are always on point. And this just happens to be, for me at least, like an unexpected delight that it's so good. It's like, yeah, really good. And magically, to bring it back to what we were first talking about, a secret undercover musical. Like that nobody...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like,
so great.
Like when I saw the Andersons were involved, I'm like, okay, so it's going to be just like the original, like WandaVision. It's not going to be a musical. It's just going to be their... The musical elements are so important because of the themes and openings and all that kind of crap. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah,
like with WandaVision, a big part of it were the jingles at the beginning, right? And the Andersons did all of them. And I thought that was going to be the same. Whoa, I was wrong about that. I mean, they went on a full on like musical episode, and they continue to be musical, which I fucking love. And so it's like, it's this, I think that it's like, we underestimated the power of how good it could be because we haven't had anything show us that it could be that great, right? And to have it like confound expectations, at least for me on my part, that's like the delight of this show, is like going in every week and watching this and going, okay, where are they going to take me now? And how are they going to surprise me? Yeah. And they do.
I mean, every single time. You know, and you haven't said, but I feel like Penguin is doing that on a different front. Like every time I think it's going to zig, it zags. Like every time I know where the show is going, like you haven't seen, but like by the end of the episode of Penguin you have to catch up on, like it's in such a different place from where it started. I mean, it's not a spoiler for the episode. It's just a line literally at the end of the episode where Oz turns to the kid and he goes, oh, we're in this shit now. Like, it's such a perfect summation of like, yeah, man, we are. Like, this is not where I thought we were going. And holy shit, like, we're in it now.
That really excites me. Oh, man.
It's such a good, like a good 1-2 punch of like lighthearted and like I don't want to call it dark, but Penguin is definitely a grimmer show than Agatha, even though Agatha is dealing with some dark shit. But yeah, they're such a good 1-2 punch that like I'm so excited for. And you know, having Superman and Lois back too, like that adds a little heart to all of that as well. It's comic book TV right now is really, really good.
It really is. It really is. And it's not even like, if you took the label off of it, if you took like comic book TV and you just said TV and you gave me these shows, they're good enough to stand on their own.
Not just that, like, if you want to talk about just TV, so a show that I was like, after the first episode, like, I was like, I don't know, this season, it might should be the last season. Only Murders is, like, we're now on episode 7, so it was 7 weeks ago that I was like, yeah, I don't know, and now I'm just like, wow. Like, what a way to rewrite... Not just the season. Like, are you caught up?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The actors, the actors
whole fucking show. Shit. Like,
yeah.
Like now it's just like, do I have to go back and rewatch the entire show? Not like some of the to take some things that you thought were like dangling plot threads from previous seasons, and it's just like so. Is this a happy accident or was this, it's that level of like, oh, like, were you writing this all along or is this a happy accident? It doesn't matter, but like, it's genius.
Yeah, it's fucking wow. It is fucking like, I honestly wonder if like, I'd love to like actually time travel and be in the room when they charted things out to make sure that Steve Martin said, by the time we like, this is the story, and like actually mapped it out via the apartments and say, you know, this is a square and we're only dealing with the east side of it. The west side is this, but guess what? The west side is a bunch of freaky little fuckers that are going to be involved the entire time. We just didn't know it. And yeah, dude, like there's a Rube Goldberg-ness to this that makes my brain so happy, because
it works. What's amazing is that it works, because in so many shows, movies, anything franchise that is franchise, mm-hmm. multiple instances, at some point, like they come back and try to rewrite stuff that, oh, like, oh, you didn't see this from the beginning. Here it is from another angle. And a lot of times, most of the time, they get crap wrong, and it feels like you see it in horror movies a lot. Like Saw built a whole franchise on this. Like, mm-hmm. oh, like this is happening before this happened. And it gets like really, it lands you in the disbelief arena, like too heavy into it. It's like, okay, it's maybe a step too far. But it works so well here. They've done it so brilliantly that I don't know. It's so funny, because I was so down on that first episode that I was just like, yeah. And now I'm just like, I can't wait for next week, man.
I know.
What is happening? Who is this? Like, and it lampoons the Hollywood stuff so well. You can see all those guys are having such a good time. Meryl Streep coming back this week. I really did not think we'd get any more of her. But her coming back this week and going head to head.
Fuck, dude. Who, like, on your bingo card, did you expect a fight?
No.
between Meryl Streep and motherfucking, my God, Melissa McCarthy in that goddamn wig. Oh, my God. So good. That whole episode is just pure joy. How people just keep on coming to the goddamn
house. Just showing up at the house.
Yes.
It's like, at one point, Melissa McCarthy is like, is it the producer? She's like, who is that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Molly Shannon.
Yeah. Another SNL alum having a good time on TV the last few weeks. Another show that I just got to the end of, you saw the end of 2 months ago, almost three months ago.
2 months ago.
So the Bad Monkey finale aired.
Yes.
And, man, like, what a fucking ride that show is.
Oh my God. Okay, so now we can finally talk about it. So, like, first off, the cast, like, slow clap for the fucking cast, who you think things don't get good. Like, you think that the things are get good by episode 8, or no, by episode 6, I think. But then there's this new layer where people start teaming up together. And it's this unexpected delight that characters are connecting. And then when everything starts to unfold and things start getting like solved, but in the most unexpected way, I'm just like, I was so happy, but so mad, because I couldn't talk to anybody about it, because everybody, like you,
Yeah, we're having to watch it one episode at a time, and you're like, yeah. I got to binge the entire thing. And had it been available for me to binge, I would not have been able to stop myself.
Oh, no, absolutely not. It's that good of a show. Like, it's one of those, like, shows that you just kind of go, okay, this is kind of odd, and then it keeps on going, and it keeps on going.
By, like, episode three, you're just like, I got to know what happens next. I have to know what happens next. Like, Jodie Turner Smith is so fucking good as the Dragon Queen. And for it to play out like it does was just absolutely, like, heartbreaking. I did not expect... I honestly kept expecting her to die.
Yes.
But for to happen like it does and to play out like it does, and for us to get to a point where you don't want her to die and that's when she does die, it's so good. It brings a lot of the characters back around in a way that I didn't expect. Like, even Nick by the end. Like, you just feel so bad for him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's this wild kind of empathy loop is the only way I can really kind of like talk about it, is that there's this, you don't necessarily like people, but you get this whole version of everybody in that show. Eventually you get their side of what they're doing, and it creates this empathy that makes things funnier, makes things more heartbreaking, and makes, like, evil deeds more understandable, but more despicable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And, like, I just, fuck, man, it's so fucking good. Like even small characters, like John, Scott Glenn's character, like, as his dad. Fuck, dude, that's so fucking great. Like, he's so great. The manatees, like, you don't, like, you think that that's going to be some stupid fucking thing, but it's kind of not. It's kind
the
of like
stuff with Michelle Monaghan, which
doesn't
really, like, it does lend to little bits of the plot, especially when she blows up his neighbor's house. But for the most part, like, every time she shows up, it's like, why is she here? And then, like, the callback at the end with her, like, calling him, and it's so freaking good. It's perfectly wrapped up with a bow, but also there's enough there that you could find something to do for a second season.
Mm-hmm. Well, Faros Hassan has two books involving Vince Vaughn's character's name? I can't even remember. Good Lord.
Andrew Yancey.
Yeah, Yancey. He has two additional books that have Yancey in them. I'm full well, like, in the hands of Hassan and Bill Lawrence on this one. Like, because what happens in this one is so good, and it's so Florida. Like I don't think that people truly, like, will truly understand until they watch it how Florida it is, but how respectful to Florida it oddly is, and its weird cast of characters and stuff. Because, I don't know, man. It's just it's this wild thing where you kind of watch it and you go, Jesus, man, this is, like, super good. Like, this is, like, better than most, like, TV mysteries with a detective trying to solve something that's out there, that's ever been, because it takes those characters like Jodie Turner Smith's Dragon Queen and her grandmother and gives it a relationship that is so human and so heartbreaking, but also so just kind of real, that would never be done on any other show other than a Bill Lawrence show. And that's what I feel like it's, like, kind of like is the kind of gold standard when it comes to Bill Lawrence. I mean, we've talked a lot about him and how much we love the work that he does. But here I feel like it's a different level because it's a different kind of show for him, at least for me. Like I feel like this is a very different show that he's dealing
yeah.
with.
It's not typical Bill Lawrence. He branched out a little bit with his network stuff. Kind of post Scrubs, but not, this kind of is all his strengths.
It really is. It really is. It's like if you liked Ted Lasso, give this a shot, because you will end up liking it in the same way, but in a completely different manner. Because, you know.
Yeah, it has that heart to it, but like, yeah. It's so much more cynical than Ted Lasso was. Like, Ted Lasso seemed to be, like, do its best to, like, acknowledge cynicism and then try to abolish it. And this kind of embraces it, but does it with so much heart. That like, yeah, it's a strange duck, but like, it's so freaking good. And especially now that it's all out there, like, this is definitely a, like, because the episodes are like 40-45 minutes probably average episode, so it's not an easy binge, but it's definitely a weekend binge. Like, you start this on a Friday, and then by Sunday, you could have burned through the 10 episodes because it's so good. Yeah, I wish I could have watched it all at once, but I feel your pain on the, like, I have to consume all of this, but also now I cannot talk to anyone about it because nobody else has seen it all. So
yeah. And like, people haven't even started it. Like, that's the thing to me that I'm always like, fuck.
Yeah. You were telling me about it 2 weeks before it aired, like, you are a week or so, whatever. Like, yeah, you got to watch Bad Monkey when it comes out. And when I got around to it, I was like, yeah, I see. But by the end, I was like, oh yeah, definitely. I see what Adam was like. Yeah, like, you just don't know. This show, it's so layered. It's so rich. The characters are so well done. It's absolutely perfect television. And Vince Vaughn in his niche, like, in his lane, man, doing his thing, like, absolutely brilliantly. And yeah, I loved it. There was another one that, like, I couldn't wait for the episodes to air. So anybody who doesn't know, I work nights. I get off at 6 a.m. Every week. I usually get off work. I'll go to the gym for about 30 minutes. I come home, walk the dog, go to bed because I'm exhausted because I work 12-hour shifts. This was the show, the only show that I would get home and I would sit in bed and I would watch the show. I'm like, I gotta know what happens.
That totally tracks, especially.
I can wait on Agatha. I could wait on Only Murders. Like, even though, like, I do want to know what happens on those shows, I can wait. This was the show that, like, every week, and there's not any, by the time you get to, like, the third episode, there's no mystery to what's going on.
No,
it's
no,
the,
absolutely not.
Like, where are, like, what's going to happen to these characters? Mm-hmm. And yeah, without fail, I'd stay up the extra hour so I could watch this show.
I do have to ask you something that, because I know you're a fan, and it was something that was unexpectedly delightful to me, was how amazing was it, their use of Tom Petty?
So, he has, Bill Lawrence has an unabashed love of Tom Petty. I thought it was great that every episode featured at least one cover of a Tom Petty song, sometimes two, in a style you didn't exactly expect. And that the show ends with an actual Tom Petty singing a Tom Petty song. Like, I thought that was a great buildup. For evidence of his Tom Petty love, he did a little show called Cougar Town. That's streaming on Hulu. I'm pretty sure every episode is like the name of every episode is a Tom Petty song. Every single episode. So yeah, he has a, like, absolute love for Tom Petty, and to be able to get this into that show. Also, for anybody who doesn't know, Tom Petty's from Florida. So like adding that to it,
was from California,
right? I think he's from Tallahassee. So like to get to add that into the show, I really, really loved, I love all those covers of those songs. There's some that are absolutely heartbreaking, and I've never considered the songs in the manner that they're presented back to you in those scenes. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, really a really great use of Petty's music.
Yeah, it was almost like, I'm going to tell people something, I'm going to make a bold statement, I don't give a shit. It's better than Scorsese's use of the Rolling Stones in his movies. Like, that's how meaningful and deep these things get in this show. Like, Scorsese, like, has his thing with the Rolling Stones and all of his movies, most of them at least, and it works. It's great, but, like, Bill Lawrence out Scorsese at his own game with this Tom Pettiness, because it's like pettiness. That's fine. But it's so much tied to the emotional state of characters when they play that you're like, wow, like, this is help telling the story. And then if you're like, you know, if you're like a fan, you just go, Jesus Christ, these Tom Petty songs, I did not realize you could use them in that way. It's a wonderful, wonderful, like added layer to things in a show that's already stacked with layers. If you want to go ahead and look into it, you know, Vaughn, I don't even understand. Like, this is the Vince Vaughn that in my 20s I grew up with, and
but you thought he was always going to be, and like he does do this kind of stuff in all his other projects, but it's not charming the way it is here.
No,
this is not Swingers level of, like, it's annoying, but it's charming. But
yeah, it's like that. It's that right level between Wedding Crashers and Swingers. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's that sweet spot where, like, in Wedding Crashers, he's kind of a fucking dick and annoying and stupid, and you just want him to shut up. And then Swingers, where it's like, he's a young kid, irascible, and he can't help himself being, like, the guy that he is. He's the best part about Swingers, I don't think that he gets enough credit for, is that he is literally Jon Favreau's hype man. And he steals the fucking show because he's such a hype man, right? But it's like this, like, thing where it's like, he has the charm and the riz, as the kids say, but it's used so effectively here. I mean, that relationship, Jesus Christ, like, the relationship between him and between Yancey and good Lord, what is her name? I can't even think of her name now. That's on the show.
She's not a detective.
Rosa. She's a medical examiner. Rosa, the relationship between Rosa and Yancey is so good. It's so kind of like everybody wants to do the shitty relationships and go, this is the reason why they're shitty. There's never relationship because like they have to have drama in the relationships. This is like two adults trying to figure shit out in a real way, in a way that makes you root for them. Like I haven't rooted for a couple in a long time. Like you yeah. want them to be together. And when they're together, you don't want shit to happen. But then you realize these two people are absolutely going to stay together because they get each other. And they like, it's the world that's weird. And they like the world outside is crazy enough that they're going to stick together. And like, that's what I like. I've always wanted to like a series or a show that's kind of like that. It kind of reminds me in a weird way of the Thin Man series. Like, and I love that. I love when a couple is super functional and it's the dysfunction outside that bonds them together, but also makes like, you know, makes the drama about the dysfunction outside and not a dysfunction inside. Cause I mean, how many times have we seen bad relationships on screen all the time? This one is not that. And it's fun to watch it because you can like, there's the chemistry is there and I haven't seen yeah. something like that in a while. I really do kind of, I love it. I love everything about this show. I mean, Delaney as Nick is like the ultimate cuck in the world that he doesn't even realize it. Or even somebody like Alex Moffitt showing up for a couple of episodes as the worst real estate agent in the world.
the way the house next door ends up is so.
Oh, it's perfect. So
like
right?
that. It's such a small, like it's a small plot, but it's like in every episode, it's just like eventually him dealing with the house next door and mm-hmm. like to end it with those two dipshits buying it and just being like, oh, it's you guys. And they're like, oh, don't worry. We're going to tear this down and build a tiny house. Like it's yeah. so perfect. Yeah, it's a absolutely brilliantly great show. There's a lot of really great television right now. I mean, there has been for a while, but yeah, it's a good time to be watching TV, and that's why I don't go to the movies.
especially when you've got Joker 2 Electric Boogaloo playing. To everybody's discrimination,
yeah.
Like even fandom. I mean, like we're seeing like it's not gonna make any more money than Morbius or Madam Web. Like and like you would think that Morbius and Madam Web were both like box office like
poison, failures. Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna make less money than all of that stuff.
Yeah. Like it yeah, made more money. Like the first one made more money opening weekend than this movie has in its entire run so far. Yeah. Like that's fucking wild to me. But you know what? That's what happens when you're like when a director decides to flame his own creation. Like, I mean, literally, he continues to double down, which is so wild. I'm like, dude, own it. Tell people that you hate audiences. Like you're a masochist. Like you make masochistic movies because he does. Todd Phillips, like I've enjoyed Todd Phillips movies, but I've never seen a movie that I could honestly say from Todd Phillips, oh, well, you know what? That was something that like reaffirmed humanity. No, he hates humanity and he hates us. And Joker 2, Ladoo-Doo, or, you know, like part do, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the fuck it's called anymore. Is like the prime example of that. Like I hold my beer. I'm going to make the most awful movie the most disgusting movie that you've ever seen in your life. And everybody's going to hate it. And that's saying a lot because I've seen Sallow, Jesus, but yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna do less money than Black Adam, and Black Adam was considered an absolute bust. So, And which is weird, because like looking back on it now, I think the problem with Black Adam was it spent so much time and money in production that there's no way it could ever be a hit. But I mean, it made $390 million worldwide. So the problem was that they probably spent over the course of 15 years and keeping The Rock on a retainer and like all of that, probably spent $300 million on the movie. So you couldn't really make a profit.
No, it was designed to be
Black Adam opened to $67 million. What was Joker's opening? It was 60, right?
It was 60 worldwide. You mean the original Joker or
part no, two? Joker 2.
Oh, it's like 40 million.
Oh, okay. So it was even less than that. Oh, yeah, that's right. The original Joker made like 65 or 66 or something.
No, it was closer to 90, I think. Oh, like 90. Opening again was okay. 90. Yeah. I think that's what it was. But yeah. And here's the thing. You take Black Adam out of Black Adam, and the movie's actually quite good. Like it has a team.
Oh, yeah, 37 for Joker 2.
Yeah.
That's so much less money than Black Adam. And Black Adam was considered a failure.
Yep. It's so baffling. It is so baffling to me that this movie was, I just don't understand. I mean, like, yeah. Like, but anyways,
it did open to more than Shazam Fury of the Gods. That only made $30 million. So, which is a shame, because I actually think that's a worthwhile movie. Anyway, we talked about Joker last week. We should probably wrap it up there. Go watch TV, everybody.
Yes, it's better especially than bad
most of what's currently playing at the movies.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Is there anything coming out this coming week?
Yeah, I think it's the big week. I think it's... No, it's not. I was thinking it was for... whatchamacallit? What's the Venom? But Venom is the
following. Yeah, Venom's the next week. I probably won't see anything else until Venom the Last Dance comes out. So,
yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to.
Yeah. Let's hope. I mean, it'll be goofy and stupid, but, you know, it might be fun.
Goofy and stupid is better than what we've gotten recently. Like, literally recently has, like, been, it's the worst. Like, I'm just like, oh, you know what opens this weekend? No, that's this weekend is Saturday Night, a.k.a. the Lorne Michaels Hero of Everything.
You told me about that. All right, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. Or more importantly, go check out the work over at Adam's website, where you can read all his reviews. There are plenty.
Yes, there are. TheMovieAisle.com. We've got a bunch of current reviews out right now, some home video releases. I've got some stuff cooking in the pot. If you were going to go see something this weekend, I would actually suggest going to see Piece by Piece, which is a review that's on the site right now. It's the Pharrell Williams documentary done in Lego. It's just delightful. It's really kind of like you understand within the first 5 minutes the reasons why they chose Legos. Like I said, it's probably the best thing that's out right now until next week when Anora comes out, and Anora is fucking great. But that's a conversation for a later time. But go see Piece by Piece or read my review at least, movieisle.com. And I know that Logan is working and cooking on some stuff so that we can.
Yeah, I've almost got. 49 in the books, so soon there will be more of my writing on the website.
Yes.
It's taken way too long, but I'm there, so soon hopefully we can talk about that next week, because I should be finished with that one sometime this week. So, all right. Yeah, we'll see you guys next week. And the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds.